Oh, there. Okay. I'll wait and ask.
Good morning. We'll start this work session on case number PU-17-097. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. Actually recused from this case, but just kind of sitting in administratively. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Krosh, and by the way, Commissioner Krosh and Commissioner Fedorchek are here, so we have a, well, it's not a meeting, so we don't need a quorum, but we have one anyway. Commissioner Krosh, do you have any opening comments?
No opening comments.
I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Fedorchek, then. It's your portfolio, and just count on you to handle the rest of the meeting, if you would.
Very good. Happy to do session. That. Yes. Thank you, Randy. Okay, so we had this hearing back in August, I'm thinking, or late July, I think it was. And we really haven't touched base on it. The company had a fair number of easements to secure, so it didn't feel like it was a big rush to get the permitting done. There were some exhibits they needed to get in, and I think a lot of that has come in now, and so it's a good time to talk about where we're at and see if we can get this continued moving forward and wrapped up at some point. So, Zach, I think you and Pat have met and talked about where we're at and what we've got, and so maybe you have a plan for working through everything today, and so I'll turn it over to you. And the one question I have on the front end is, because this is on my mind because I spoke to the Association of Counties about it yesterday, there's that new pipeline law that went into effect August 1st that allows us to supersede local ordinances if we've got the evidence to do so, preponderance of the evidence. Now, we'll be approving this after that law is in effect, or making a decision on it, I should say, after that law went into effect. But I'm confused as to whether or not that law is relevant in this case or not. Did the application have to arrive prior to that law being enacted for that law to be effective for this case?
I'll answer that question first, Commissioner, and answer it the easy way and say that we don't need to answer that question, because there aren't any local permits that are at issue. The company has indicated that they've received the necessary permits for this. Conditional use permits, I believe, are not required by Ward County, nor Williams County, if the PSC approves. So to my knowledge, there are not any permit issues, local permit issues, that is.
Okay.
So I don't think we really need to get into that.
All right, very good. That's simple.
Yeah. So, like you said, Commissioner Fedorchek, Pat and I have been meeting and going over this matter. I've also been in contact with the company's attorneys on some questions that Pat and I had developed. For our purposes, we do have a proposed findings of facts, conclusions of law and order that was docketed. We do have an objection that was filed by one of the interveners in this case. Here there are two interveners. The Laborers Union is one intervener, and the other intervener are represented by Derek Broughton's office and are some landowners. And those interveners filed an objection pertaining to paragraph 37 of the proposed findings. I believe it's a non-issue, and in response, the company responded indicating that they would follow the commission's requirements that topsoil be removed in advance of any winter construction and stockpiled separately. That's also not going to be an issue here, just maybe getting a bit ahead here. But in conversation this morning with Mr. Biella, attorney for Senex, he indicated that Senex at present, and he does not believe that it would happen in talking to his client, they do not anticipate doing any winter construction. What they are asking is that the commission issue a permit, and they are missing some aspects. They have some surveys that need to be completed. They are working on the cultural resources portion on areas that they recently surveyed in anticipation of sending that to SHPO for anticipated concurrence, and that appears to be taking a month to a month and a half is what they've estimated that that may take. They have concurrence on a bulk of the project, but they have asked that they get a permit and that the order contain language that limits them from doing any work in the areas that either they don't have an easement with a landowner or they haven't been able to survey yet. And it's my understanding from talking to the company that there is one linear mile in which they do not yet have survey permission. The company has not started any condemnation proceedings. They are still working with landowners trying to work out easements with those landowners. Commissioner Fedorchuk, you popped in while Pat and I were meeting, I think last week or might have been the week before, but you had asked what percentage of easements have been obtained. That number it appears to be about the same from what the hearing was. 60% of landowners where they have easements, and that's miles, and then 62% of the actual landowner, so about 60% either if you look at it in terms of miles of the project or in terms of landowners. So
since, just on that issue, and you maybe don't have more on that, Zach, but since the hearing, I've got 61% of easements attained. That hasn't gone up since the hearing? Have they maybe just not been working on that, or are they stuck with some folks?
I don't know. I don't know for sure, Commissioner, as to the you know, if they've been working. I can only assume as much that they have been. I can't imagine that they haven't been. But you know, as far as the easement acquisition, those are the numbers that that were provided to me recently.
Okay. And I have a note in my notes from the hearing that they've obtained consent. I don't think that means easement, but from 86% of the line. Okay.
They have now surveyed all of the line except for one mile.
Okay.
And that's one particular landowner apparently that will not grant survey permission. And if you look at the late filed exhibit 26, that contains essentially an update on what they're doing the first paragraph looks like the second sentence of late filed exhibit 26, which is dated October 9th. And it says, since the hearing, additional permissions to survey were granted for 15 parcels of property. KLJ completed environmental and cultural resource field surveys between September 11th and 29th. During the surveys, 9 avoidance areas consisting of cultural resource sites were identified. No additional avoidance or exclusion areas were identified within the survey parcels. They've included some maps of those. So it is those cultural resource areas that they are currently preparing a cultural resource survey form for submittal to the SHPO, and then they have indicated to me that that may take about a few weeks is what they've indicated, and then after submitting to SHPO, it's anticipated that it would take a few weeks before hearing back from SHPO on those particular areas. But they do note in the last paragraph, the first sentence of that last paragraph on that first page of late filed exhibit 26, with the exception of 2 parcels, all parcels have been surveyed along the proposed route, and survey results have been submitted to PSC. And it's about one linear mile of the route. They have indicated here and in late filed exhibit 26, as well as in conversations I've had with Mr. Biella, that this 1 mile remaining portion is cropland, so the chances of any issues rising cultural or wildlife or wetlands issues are unlikely, but of course they still need to survey that area at some point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They have filed additional late filed exhibits, and maybe we can start off by just going through those. Absolutely. And we can highlight what they needed to do there and what we had asked them to do at the hearing. Late filed exhibit 22, and Pat, feel free to jump in here if you think something needs to be said about it, but late filed exhibit 22 was docketed and received by the commission. It's the locations of the mainline valves. It also indicates whether or not those are manually operated or remotely motor-operated valves, and they attached maps of those locations or those specific locations. There are 13 in all on this sheet. So we had asked at the hearing the specific locations. At the hearing, they did not have those specific locations. Now we have those specific locations.
Wow, that's great. It's really hard to distinguish the color.
Yeah, it's a little tough.
Manual and the motor operated.
Maybe. I think if you really, that may be true. If you go onto the first page, though, Commissioner, it might, yeah, it's maybe one extra step, but it does indicate the type on that spreadsheet as to this.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if you had a question, yeah, it is hard to tell a little bit. It's the same shades kind of red and a little lighter red, it looks like, maybe.
Okay.
Orange.
That helps, though. There's not that many, so it's easy to check.
So that was late filed exhibit 22. Late filed exhibit 23. Oh, go ahead, Pat. Yeah. Turn your mic on there.
About the valve location. Were there any questions about the valve locations?
What questions did it raise for you?
Well, for me, it you can see that some of the valves are very close, and that means that they're, you know, protecting a water, like a tributary or something, they're protecting a spill there. Seven and eight, for example, I think they're farther apart. And that is the White Earth River, I believe, there at seven and eight. And wondering if you had any concerns about that.
I wonder if that's because of the valley there. It's there.
I'm not sure why.
It's a wide expanse across that valley. And not that far, probably. That's a long, that looks like. Well, what's that key say? 8 miles? 5, 0 to 5.
8 miles.
Eight. You've got younger eyes.
A little under. I just have good contacts, that's all. So it might be about 4 miles.
It's about four, yeah.
4 miles.
Yeah, about. Commissioners, I can certainly ask the company as to that. I'm sure there's some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I didn't see anything else popped out at me. There was one related late file exhibit regarding the maximum discharge potential.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next one. That's late file.
That's the next one? Okay.
Yeah. So on those block valves, I mean, obviously, and then am I looking at 9 and 10 again? No, 10 and 9 and 10, is that a river crossing as well? Looks like it.
9 and 10.
There's a little.
There's Beaver Creek is in there.
Yeah.
I don't think Beaver Creek was identified, however, as a
as one that they were, right?
There were Missouri River, White Earth River, Little Muddy River, and the Little Knife River were identified as river crossings by the company.
Okay. If it's thanks for checking with them on the rationale for that 4 mile distance on the white earth. If it'd be good to have that closer and less product in that span in the case of a spill, but they're sure that's their goal too, so there must be some rationale for that.
As Pat mentioned, the late filed Exhibit 23 is that we had asked for a worst-case pipeline discharge and volume.
Yep.
And so they've indicated, the company has indicated where that is, and it's a fairly short document indicating what that location would be and the amount in a worst-case situation.
And in that case, I believe that worst-case situation is between valves 2 and 3, that length of pipe between valves 2 and 3. But it doesn't really say that in their response to the worst-case scenario.
10 miles west, so.
It says 10 miles west, and that's about where valve 2 is. It's about 10 miles west.
Looking at the map, that appears to be the furthest point in which there would be, you know, valves between those locations. So that would
between
probably make sense, yeah. Mm. If you look at the map, just eyeballing it, it appears to.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want that clarified, but it appears it would be between 2 and 3.
And the only way to make that less would be to have a block valve closer to 2, probably.
Somewhere in between.
Another one,
yeah.
Or
but then there's another very long length.
But there's,
8 to 9, I think it is.
That's true.
So.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get into the operations
of it.
They probably would switch, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So block valve number 3 is listed on the second map, but not on, it could also be shown on the first map. You can see where the bump is.
Yes.
Okay, so.
You could even draw it in there on just to the south and
right.
A little bit to the west of that
mm-hmm.
little lake. Pond area there, or slough, or whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Be where it would be. Okay.
All right.
Lay filed Exhibit 24 is the Dakota Skipper Avoidance Strategy Report. The company has identified 17 locations of potential impact. At the same time, the company, during the surveys that were completed by KLJ, did not observe any of the Dakota skippers. But what they have proposed to do and what they indicated at the hearing was to create a 50-foot buffer between the sites during construction and have a 10-foot buffer of protective fencing. Around, and they've indicated on the attachments, Appendix A indicates in kind of turquoise, I guess it would be, the potential habitat areas. And I believe that they have identified the habitat areas by, and if you read the report, by indication of a couple indication, but one is vegetation, the type of vegetation mm-hmm. that would be conducive towards Dakota skippers locating in those areas. So they have indicated on the maps in Appendix A where these 17 locations are, and I believe there were two areas in which they are going to bore because construction equipment would not be able to get through those particular areas due to the proximity of the habitat and the center line. So I believe that this satisfies what we've asked the company to do and they're agreeable to this, and we would include provisions in any proposed order.
Can someone remind me what the land scar on it would be location one in Appendix A, the first map? Is that a roadway, or is that a previous or an existing pipeline?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, Commissioner.
I see a little bit of overlap in terms of what that corridor would have been. Maybe it's the pipeline being replaced because it's getting closer to Minot.
If you'd like, Commissioner, I can ask and see what the company would respond with.
No, please.
Okay.
So these areas that they've identified are not critical habitat. They're just potential habitat based on the type of vegetation that's there.
I think that under our definition, it would technically be an exclusion though, because the Dakota Skipper is a protected threatened species.
Okay.
But they have provided avoidance area and have indicated what they plan to do to lessen the threat to the threatened species. It's up to the commission to determine whether or not this meets those standards. It's my opinion that they would meet the standards, mm-hmm. but it is your decision to make that call.
Well, I think I'm comfortable with it. I mean, they've delineated it. These aren't areas that are identified as critical habitat on that whole database that's been delineated with the critical habitat. It's potential habitat. They've marked it. They've got a good, plan for avoiding it and making sure that their equipment and their construction folks avoid it, I think. And then they're boring in areas that are the most sensitive, so I think it's a good plan.
Commissioner Crosius, I'll find out what that location is. I may even be able to ask companies, some of their attorneys are here, so I can maybe ask them and talk to you after, and we can figure that out.
All right, thank you.
Good morning. Okay, late filed exhibit 25 includes two addendums to it that were more recently filed, but they have to do with reports prepared by a third party for Senex Terracon Consultants, which reviewed areas of geologic instability, landslide type areas, and we had noted at the hearing there were several areas that appeared to be geologically unstable, indicated from the North Dakota Department that has that and other maps, but they did commission these reports, and we have them. What the company, there's three of them, so I'll go over the first one in terms of the first one being filed, and that was in the southwest quarter of Section 33, Township 154, Range 103 in Williams County. And the company went, rather, Terracon's report went through and indicated what was going on in terms of stability, in terms of whether or not these areas could sustain a pipeline in these areas, and they also included some exhibits with photographs as well as some schematics as far as the engineering of potential boring, or the other alternative was cut and cover. So the Terracon on page 3 of their report indicate that there are three alternatives.
This, hold on one second.
Yeah,
Zach.
No problem.
Is this the first report or the second report?
It is the first one. Okay. It's the one that was filed on the cover letter is September 25th,
yep.
2017.
Okay.
So three alternatives. One is choose an alternative route. I don't think that was it was looked at, obviously, but that isn't the option that Cenex indicated they're choosing. Cenex indicated that their preference and what they would like to do is the cut and cover alternative. And I did ask the company to provide me with just additional information as far as why cut and cover over directional drilling. And they did provide me with just a list of a few things. Basically, one, and it's maybe fairly obvious, but the engineering folks at Terracon indicated that it's feasible to do cut and cover. And if the proper techniques are used, which Cenex has indicated that they would use those proper techniques, then that was a perfectly acceptable method to delay the line in this particular area. They've indicated to me that cut and cover methods allow for the construction to be more efficient, which would reduce time and cost for accomplishing the work. The cut and cover method would also allow for future access for pipeline inspection and maintenance, where the HDD would not allow as easy of access. I'm sure where there's a will, there's a way they could get access, but it would be quite a bit more intensive, I would suspect, as far as inspection and potential maintenance. The HDD profile shown here would have depths of up to 36 feet below grade. So that's quite significant. So they wouldn't be able to use visual or X-ray magnetic particle methods, which they could with the cut and cover, because it wouldn't be as deep. The cut and cover, you should note, I mean, we're talking here, according to Terracon, they're talking a preliminary estimates indicate a depth of the order of 8 feet would be sufficient. So, I mean, it is deeper than what, under non-geologic unstable conditions would be. And then the third, one of the other reasons, and the third reason that was provided to me by the company as far as the choosing of the cut and cover is for them it is significantly less costly. They indicate that HDD installation adds approximately $150 per foot, and in this case of this particular segment would be about $127,000 in additional cost to Cenex in the project. So those are the reasons why Cenex has, at least has indicated to me, why they would prefer the cut and cover. They've stressed to me that it is their experts' opinion that cut and cover is a feasible alternative for laying the pipe in this area. So they've asked for the cut and cover method to be used.
Landowners would be aware of the options in an agreement?
Well,
because really at the end of the day, does a landowner understand how the construction, how it will be accomplished? And are they signing off on it in effect, saying, okay, this is good?
It's a good question, Commissioner. I would be speculating, though, in responding to it, because the terms of the easement are between the private easement is between the company and the landowner.
Right.
If the private easement provides that this type of method, then they would be aware. The question for the commission is the method for going through essentially an avoidance area. I mean, this is an area that's been identified as unstable and prone to potential landslides. So the question for the commission and the question for you is whether or not what's been provided in this late filed exhibit satisfies any concerns that you may have. I understand what you're saying with the landowners and their knowledge. However, the commission would not ordinarily
you know, right. be the place in which, you know, we're satisfying any potential request for a landowner for this to be done or that to be done. Our job is to make sure that it satisfies the statutory requirements, our regulations, and you know, that this area is suitable, and the evidence that has been presented to us from the company is that these two methods can be utilized, and the company has indicated their preference for the cut and cover.
Right. Can you give me the cost variance again? Was it 126 or 127?
127.
So, oh, here we go. Here's the slope.
It just popped back into my head about avoidance areas. Right. They have to show why this route, why they can't.
No reasonable alternative.
Yeah, no reasonable alternative to this route. If I remember right.
Yes. I think we have testimony on that as far as the location, but we'll have to go back and look. And I might be confusing it. Are we talking avoidance or are we talking exclusion area?
I think it's avoidance. I think it's
geographically unstable areas.
I get that. I get it.
Okay.
No, it's in our rule.
Well, usually they're summarized in the...
I know that these areas were discussed at the hearing, and as far as, quite frankly,
under criteria,
you know, the locations of these areas, invariably there are going to be, you know, terrain that is not level. I mean, we're talking western North Dakota, so I mean
it's an avoidance.
Yeah, that's what I had thought.
Areas which are geologically unstable is an avoidance area. And it says the pipeline was cited to provide the least damaging environmental alternative while minimizing excessive rerouting of the pipeline. So there must be more on the record as to why they can't avoid it. Senex would complete geotechnical investigations along the PROS pipeline route to ensure the pipe is being installed in geologically stable areas and to minimize the potential for pipeline integrity issues. Well, this doesn't really show that they're going to be constructing in geographically stable areas. It's showing how they can go through the unstable area in a more stable way. Right?
Right. That's true. But I think, you know, certainly it's my recollection that there was additional information that was talked about at the hearing. I'd have to go back and look at it.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, there does have to be a showing of no reasonable alternative, and that would be, again, a decision for you to make. I think probably what's best is to go back to the company and just say, hey, you know, find the no reasonable alternative language and discussion on that, and we can report back. I can also look through my notes as well.
And so if there's no reasonable alternative, there's still the question about the method.
Right.
The alternative for the method construction.
Does it say, I'm looking through this, and I didn't get time to read the newest report. This is on a different site, though, right? Site 2?
Yeah, there's site 2 and there's site 3.
Okay, so this is site 1 that
right.
we're talking about right now.
Site 1, yes.
So I can't tell really well when they get to the 8 feet, what are they in? Like, are they in some sort of more stable ground, or why did they pick 8 feet?
I think it just says that would be their preliminary estimates, the Terracon contractors that have went out there. Whether or not it would be 8 feet or more,
and I suppose potentially less, would probably depend on actual conditions when they would actually dig that area and determine whether or not it would be.
So it says on the cut and cover, what I'm seeing, to bury the pipeline deeply enough so that it will lie at a depth beneath the level of the shallow slip plane. Our preliminary estimates indicate a depth on the order of 8 feet would be sufficient. So if we're going back to the one where we've had an issue on a previous case where the pipe actually was in a geographically unstable area and it did slip and it was exposed, that's what we're trying to avoid here.
That's true. Yeah.
And it's sometimes caused, the construction makes it more unstable. That's the problem with the cut and cover, is it the actual construction process makes the whole plane less stable and more likely to slip again.
In that situation, it certainly did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way that it is there a method that it doesn't do that, Pat? If you get down deep enough, is that the theory?
Well, we had another case where I think the company agreed to do the HDD that they would be down into a more compacted soil,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't be as susceptible to slides.
Yeah.
And so they went deeper to get into that soil.
Well, the HDD takes care of it because you're not breaking up the soil, loosening it. You're not doing any of that, and you're getting deeper. So it's
not creating a potential problem.
Mm-hmm. How long of an area is this? I'm trying to see on the. Well, for how?
The cut and cover. Check to see here. There's a length.
So if we,
the horizontal length on pages is 3, almost at the bottom of bottom of the page, it has the HDD length and the total horizontal length. So cut and cover would be about 835 feet, HDD would be about 849 feet of pipe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you go back, Pat, and this is where your engineering mind really helps, on the photos that are towards the back of that document, there's two, they aren't numbered, but, well, the first.
It's like at the bottom right is exhibit, are you talking about exhibit 2, Commissioner?
Let's see, 4 of 6 on this, is it exhibit 2? Yeah, the exhibits, there's 4 of 6 of the exhibit, so I'm not sure why it's 4 of 6, but you see that one with the hill on this?
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming down that hill and digging in. It's not going aside across it, so that seems good, doesn't it? That they aren't going across the hill, they're going down it. And
well, two schools of thought, if they're going down it, of course they'll have the berms to displace water off to the side, I believe.
I've done inspections on another pipeline that came down a steep, fairly steep slope, and there was reclamation concerns that you know they had water. First of all, they didn't have water diverters, and so the water was cutting into the soil on the topsoil. And then later on, they added water diverters so it would run off more off to the side and not cut into that topsoil. And the vegetation. It was hard to reestablish vegetation. So those are some of the things that can happen if you have a steeper slope in the soil that doesn't easily support vegetation. Mm-hmm.
So they'd be going down the one side and then would they be going up another side?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just on the downslope that we're worried? The other side isn't a problem? Is that?
Well, there's a north, it appears there's a north slope and a south slope here.
Okay. Unnamed.
On this drawing. 4 of 6.
Mm-hmm. And are both sides unstable? The whole area would be?
I think that the north slope was of more concern. Although the south slope is, it's more grad, it's almost as steep of a slope, but it's more, it's not irregular, it's more regular, I think, just from the drawing.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, you can actually see where the erosion, just natural erosion, not caused by soil disturbance, but just the soil geology has occurred over the course of time. So a more direct route down the slope would create a smaller watershed, and then with the water diverters, it's not displacing as much as a route that would cross and have the whole hillside. You get a heavy rain, it's all going to come down.
And the incident that you were recalling, Commissioner Fedorchak, where the pipe, where we had the slide and it exposed the pipe,
mm-hmm.
and that, if I remember right, was more where the trench had been along.
Yeah, on the side of a hill.
Parallel to the slope of the terrain instead of like perpendicular to.
Yeah. What are these?
I would just, go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious what these lab results, the last two pages are. What do they tell us?
I was going to point out, too, on page 6 of 6,
mm-hmm.
if you want to take a look at that. This is the HDD, what it the profile would look like. And they mentioned 36 feet deep as one of the mm-hmm. spots. I think that is shown at the distance on the bottom scale at 300. It looks like it was that.
Oh, I see. From
it's
the
about
top
36
of the
feet there, yep.
32 on the other side.
So the thing about what they're saying on the HDB, I mean, I definitely recognize the cost increase, but in terms of maintenance, when people are advocating for HDD, they often say, well, it's really safe because you do so much work on the pipe before you put it in that you really don't have to do maintenance. So the maintenance issue, I think, I wouldn't consider that as one of the rationales because those pipes are inherently supposed to not require maintenance. You put them under a river and you're expected to never have to do anything or you have to replace it. So that's not a strong argument in favor of the, you know, against HDD and for the cut and cover. Some of the other ones are, I grant, are legitimate, but so what are the last two lab result pages tell us?
Those are just talking about the type of soil that is in this area.
Okay.
To determine
plasticity index. Can you read that chart, Pat?
I'm not so familiar with this science. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to provide the background information for their conclusion that this if they compact the soil, if they were to do the cut and cover and they were to compact the soil that is there, this detail about the soil is supports their conclusion that if you go down 8 feet, that it probably would be hold.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Pat, on the whole, as an engineer?
Well, I wouldn't dispute the results that this firm has presented. We just have some experience with other situations that would lead me to prefer, I think, the HDD bore. It does cost money, though.
Right.
I would say on that, I mean, as far as the other instances, it is, in some respects, comparing apples to oranges, because without knowing what those other instances are and what techniques that were used or not used by those and when that took place, I think we should take a look at what was done and what is it any different from what's being done, proposed here as far as cut cover. And I I'm not an expert in this area at all, and I defer to Pat, but I also don't think it's necessarily right to compare one instance where another company had an issue on a geologically unstable area and that pipeline slid and it may not have been done properly. Here I think we have to weigh whether or not, you know, if we have our construction, maybe we monitor every inch when construction is being done under the cut and cover method, if, you know, that's a possibility. And we monitor this closely as far as proper installation. If the expert here is saying that this can be done, if it's done properly, I don't necessarily think that using other instances that may not be the same type of situation is necessarily appropriate. Mm-hmm. But I don't disagree with anything Pat said. How's that for a qualification?
Well, I think we have to get on the record why it's, first of all, why it can't be avoided.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can make the determination on the method.
Okay.
I'm not seeing any notes either from that I kept on the whole lens. I do remember talking about it quite a bit, though, so I don't know why I didn't write anything down.
I think also making a determination on the ability to revegetate typically is not the best soil in the world. Mm-hmm. It's not like revegetating rich bottomland soil on the sides. It typically has very little topsoil, so that I know there are areas out in the Badlands by the ranch that it was bare before they put a pipeline in, and it was bare for a reason. There was literally no topsoil. It had washed down to the bottom over hundreds of years or, you know, whatever the case is. So,
quite frankly, I would think, me being a layman in many respects with this, but I would think that the vegetation would be also an important component to reduce the potential for erosion. I mean, that would be one of the priorities, I should think. But
yeah, so
think it's a good point, though.
We should analyze, you know, make an do an analysis or something to that effect. One thing that crossed my mind on all of this, there are the added construction costs, but the company also has to weigh out whether or not they have to go back and redo it if erosion does occur and what the long-term costs would be, because they also, you know, have that risk in terms of having to go back and shore things up, replace soil if it does wash away, revegetate again, and there are considerable costs over the long term that would factor into the cost equation for them either way.
So do we know whether this is a, is there's really shallow topsoil in this area? And if it's native prairie, I'm guessing it's native prairie. But those,
I can
those two
out.
Things also affect the ability to grow, the get the grasses back, the vegetation back.
Well, not a guarantee. Just looking at the visual photos, that would have to be native prairie.
You'd think it was, right? But
you can't assume anything.
Sites 2 and 3 are also we recently just received those as addendums to additions to exhibit late fall exhibit 25. Cut and cover is the preferred method there. Again, same reasons. I don't have an estimated cost, but on these particular items, there are, however, which is different from the site 1, we'll call it site 2. Site 2 on the third page. There's two routes through the area: section C-C and section D-D. And they're shown on Exhibit 6 of 6. And Terracon indicates that Section C-C is preferred. I confirmed with Senex this morning that that is the portion in which, you know, that they would, the route in which they would choose as to that. So, and the same is true on Site 3. There's a preferred section. Section B-B is preferred over the A-A, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And Senex has indicated that they would go with the route preferred by their expert on both of those. I think that there's probably a lot of the same discussion that we would have as we did with Site 1. We can certainly go over those if you'd like, but I don't know how much we would necessarily accomplish this morning by doing that. And just getting some of the same information. But certainly if you have specific questions on sites 2 or sites 3 that would be different from site 1, we can go through those now and I can bring those up to the company. But
I think the same questions, you're right, Zach, would be relevant. Another question that I've heard a number of different times from landowners in the west with this type of landscape, a growing interest in the construction method that would minimize the amount of topsoil and subsoil in the amount of construction area. So rather than coming in and blazing off 50 feet or however many hundred and segregating topsoil and subsoil, doing it very minimally, especially in areas where there's not a lot of topsoil, where there's native prairie that's hard to reestablish, do a really narrow construction corridor, and then the native prairie fills in itself much better. I just had a long conversation about this again yesterday. So maybe in this type of thing that's not possible, but I'd be interested in their feedback from the experts on whether that is an option in this, and that could help in this area, reducing the amount of soil that's removed and more likely to erode down the line, and also improving the likelihood that the native vegetation will reestablish. So a much narrower construction corridor.
Because obviously, though, with the HDD, that would really be an issue.
Yeah. But if they want to do the cut and cover, a more narrow,
yeah, would be onto that. I understand what you're saying.
Yep. So you're just talking about in these areas.
Yep, just in these areas, not the whole route. And maybe that's not technically feasible to get that deep if you're going real narrow. I don't know, but I'd be interested in their thoughts on that.
Part of the difficulty here in getting these is, I mean, we have these expert reports, and I mean, at the same time, we have to review them, and I'm not an engineer. Pat's more in tune with that, so I would certainly defer to him. But you know, it's just one of the difficulties of it. But I'll have further conversation with the company. I think we're at least probably coming back on that issue. I'm anticipating probably having another work session on that. And,
Go on to
late file the 26, and we've already talked a little bit about that actually at the beginning of this, so I don't know how much more we need to go over this particular one. This is just the additional surveys that were granted since the hearing. There's 15 parcels. Again, the only area, there's two parcels. I understand it's one landowner, I believe. It's a one linear mile, which they haven't been able to survey yet. So that goes over that. There are, I think, nine, they said, cultural resources that were nine avoidance areas with cultural resources. Nothing else as far as exclusion or avoidance areas in these additional parcels, and they're seeking SHPO concurrence once they complete the report to send to SHPO.
Okay, very good. I don't have any additional questions on that.
So just going through the list on the late file exhibits, the only ones that we need still are the SHPO concurrence on the areas not surveyed, which I just indicated they're working on. And, of course, the one-mile area hasn't been surveyed yet, so they'll have to, you know, get survey permission, or I suppose some other alternative, I suppose, is possible. But that'll have to be done as well. And we have all of the other late filed exhibits. They're all on file.
Okay, one question on this last, on Exhibit 26. I did note on here that they're listing areas which are geologically unstable in this route, too. Are these some of those that we just discussed? Do you know?
That's a good question.
Or are
there
additional ones?
I don't know if they are. I'd be guessing, so let me ask.
All right. Okay, and then on the... I have a couple other issues just of things that came up at the pipeline or at the hearing, but I'll if you have nothing more, I'll go into those, Zach.
I don't have anything else.
Okay. So there was a couple landowners that attended the hearings and had requests for reroutes. I'm pulling up their names right now. Keith Marshall doesn't like the angle they're taking, has offered two other options, has property adjacent to the development. 10 miles west of Minot was him. And then Ron Nichols, Palermo, he also was opposed to the route. He had the gravel that he wanted to preserve the ability to potentially develop at some point down the road. Do you have any updates from the company on their negotiations with those folks?
I don't, and I can only assume, and I would be only assuming that that they're still working on those. But I will check, because I did note in looking over my notes those landowners, and there might have been another one, but
yeah,
Marshall,
I think there's one more
Nichols,
too.
Maybe it was at the Tioga hearing.
See, those were the ones I mentioned were mine. Sheldon Smith was at the Tioga hearing.
Wayne Haugie
and Haugie. He might be the one that didn't give him the survey. I don't know.
May have been. Sheldon's clients, I think that was a little bit more, Sheldon Smith's clients were a little bit more complex, and I think that the company did provide some response to some of the things that they had tried to do. I think that they indicated, at least my notes indicate, that the company had tried to work with Sheldon's clients as far as rerouting, and they had rerouted some areas, but not to the satisfaction. But I can check on that as well.
Yeah, the Strobeck family? Yes.
Strobeck, yeah.
They wanted them to bore 1,000 feet through their native pasture. Additional route added 1 mile. I have. Okay, I always like to follow up with those folks who show up. Another folks, Wayne Johnson, he sounds like he's worked out an agreement he had at that time and doesn't want to allow winter construction, which they aren't doing. Paul Ogden had some specific issues about fire during the drought of construction, gates and those sorts of things. Haugi, he just doesn't want it through his original homestead. I'm guessing that that's, nothing has changed there, but and then what's this, Dan Deaver, personal rep for landowner Shelley Township, Berthold, concerned about what happens with the old line. And, okay, I think we talked through all those at the hearing. Okay, those are my notes from people who came and attended. So, yeah, anything.
I'll follow up with them and see if we can get a response, since it sounds like we're coming back on the issue with the cut and cover or HCD, and I'll work on getting more information. Company representatives are here, so they probably don't need to tell them too much since they've been listening in. But Pat and I will work hard to get ready, and we can work on setting up something in the future, in the near future.
Then there is one other issue I just wanted to mention. So the land department has some criteria that they follow for percent of easements that need to be
90% approximately, and I asked the company about that, and the company has indicated to me that the land department has indicated to them they have no issues with the route, but they will not sign an easement until approximately 90% easement acquisition. So
yeah.
That's where that is at, which I think it was about the same were at the hearing for that issue.
And so I'm assuming that's never been our policy. But I'm assuming that they are doing that so that their easement isn't used as leverage against others for signing easements. Or what would be behind the land board's rationale?
That could be one. I'm not sure. I think at one point, and I don't know where I got this. I think at one point, as the land department wanted to make sure that their easement that they've negotiated is in line as far as a monetary value, similar to what is being paid by the company. I'm not sure 100% on that. I don't know. Pat might have some more insight on that, though. No?
Something you said earlier about speculating.
Yeah, I know. We don't get involved with that, Commissioner, so it is a speculation on my part a bit. But they do have that policy. We don't get in the middle of that because that is, granted they are a state agency, but it is a... It is their negotiation with the company on their easement.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is always...
Speculation could be a route change if they...
Oh, sure.
If they don't have 90% of the easements and the route is going to change, maybe they don't want to go through all of that permitting process.
And this is always a little bit of a sensitive area because we aren't involved in the easements, and I appreciate that. And I also respect how many different issues are up in the air that companies trying to build pipelines have to manage and get it all to come together in an efficient way at a set time. What I'm concerned about with our work, because I'm not saying that this would happen with this pipeline company, but I've heard about it happening with others. So the state permit becomes leverage for landowners to sign easements, and they don't understand that they still have the right to negotiate the easement. They hear, oh, the state's issued its permit, so I have no choice now. And I don't like that. I don't think that that's appropriate. So it's just a note to the company, if you can get those easement numbers up, it really supports a more efficient conclusion of our work as well, because I'm sensitive to that, you know,
That's happening. Part of it. That's part of it, and I think companies are aware of that fact. And I don't know where I'm getting this somewhere in my head, though. I thought that we had a prior case where we might have given some provisional approval, but we made the company agree not to use that as a negotiating tactic. I'd have to look back in my notes, something like that. But I mean, I don't necessarily think we're at that point of approval, because we need to figure out these geologic unstable areas. But I think by saying that, it reminds everyone as to what that concern is. Because, I mean, here we're at 60%, 40% of the line is yet to be signed as far as the easement goes. So there's quite a bit more.
Yeah.
Credit, though, that, you know, the company has avoided having condemnation yet. I mean, that is an available remedy to them. And they have not commenced any condemnation proceedings yet.
Okay. I think that's all the issues I had. Brian, did you have any other issues
to discuss? No, that covers questions I had.
Okay.
Good.
All right, Zach and Pat, thanks for all your work in advance to get everything in order for a productive work session. And I think we have some clarity on what issues remain, and we will maybe next week set another work session.
Okay.
When do you have any thoughts in mind on how soon you'd like that to be?
Well, I mean, I don't know that there's terribly too much more for the company to get, and I would reasonably think that they would be able to get responses to me, you know, in a week or so, as to these other issues we brought up today. So I'm thinking, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, we could probably set another work session, I would guess.
Okay.
But maybe what we should do is let me just talk to the company and indicate if they have concerns of getting information to me in a week or so. Then we might need to push that back.
Okay, sounds good. Then we can have some dates in mind, maybe the for our meeting next week.
And I'll coordinate it with Pat.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks, everybody. That concludes our work session on case number PU-17-97.